Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we welcome back our good friend and colleague Norman Solomon, who is founder and executive director at the Institute for Public Accuracy and the co-founder and national director of Roots Action, where I also work. He is the author of books including Made Love Got War, War Made Easy, and War Made Invisible. Norman Solomon, welcome back to Talk World Radio.
Thanks a lot, David.
Thanks for coming on. I'm sorry it can't be about good news, but I think we should talk about Gaza, which you've been doing a lot of writing about and Roots Action has been doing a lot of campaigning about. What's the latest?
Yeah, good news is in very short supply, and from the Middle East and Gaza in particular, just horrible. It's from outside, from far away, dystopian, from inside, hellish. And it's hard to see any near-term solution of any sort. I believe that the pincer, you might say, the vice that the U.S. public is caught between is just so callous and so desensitized to the human results of the Israeli and U.S. combined policies. On the one hand, we have mass media. On the other hand, we have the U.S. government. And between the two, there's this dance that sometimes appears to be a conflict or some sort of push-pull. But I'm afraid in the last almost 2 years, what has clearly become genocide in Gaza has really been ratified and made possible by the U.S. mass media and government.
It also seems to me like people in the U.S. have been told they can vote for a new emperor every 4 years, and that's about it. And last year, they had a choice between two supporters of the genocide in Gaza, and in 3 years, they'll probably have a choice between two more, where in a lot of countries, you'd see people in the streets, you'd see protests, you'd see shutting down the government, you'd see massive efforts to change things now. And I know Washington is thousands of miles away from a lot of people, but Congress members are back home in August, right?
That's right. This month, it's a so-called a work period, and whether they're out golfing or meeting with constituents really varies as, I can't even say dysfunctional, because I think the U.S. political government system is very functional for the oligarchy, the billionaires, those who, as in the case of the first Supreme Court, Chief Justice John Jay said, those who own the country should run it. Those beliefs are really very deeply instilled from the hierarchy in Washington, for the most part, to Silicon Valley and Wall Street and so forth. And yet, with this broken, except for the oligarchy and so forth, this broken government system still has, especially now, one aspect that can, in theory, be responsive to what people want, and that's Congress. And everybody, almost everybody, unless you live in a really remote rural area, you live within pretty decent travel distance to a congressional office, a member of the House of Representatives, maybe even a senator. And yet the deference, the culture of undue respect, and sometimes to a nauseating extent of just praising members of Congress unduly because they do some things that we like, and when they don't, they're just given a pass. Well, that should never be the case, but especially now when the warfare state is just out of control. We have the domestic components of that with the ICE raids, with sending the Marines into Los Angeles as sort of a precursor to apparently plans for other cities. And so there's no reason to be back on our heels any more than we've been pushed back on our heels. We shouldn't be putting ourselves back as well. And that means being active and organizing effectively, which is easier said than done because it's not in the culture. The mass culture tells us to go out and buy things and maybe vote once in a while. That's not how change happens, not good change.
It seems like despite the insufficient activism, public opinion has been moving in the right direction in the polls, even if opinion within the United States Senate or House of so-called representatives is far behind. Am I right about that?
If not only, if only we had democracy. I think I know about a website. Is it one that you coordinate? Let's Try Democracy?
Yeah,
Is that the name?
also known as davidswanson.org.
What a concept. And really, in the case of Gaza, the US military aid to Israel, and in fact, the Israel war on people in Gaza, it would be over. I was stunned a few days ago working on an article which has just come out on Friday in The Hill about Kamala Harris. And I looked at not only her refusal to distance herself from President Biden when she was running for president for a few months about Gaza, but when you look at the polling then, most people and overwhelmingly most Democrats wanted an embargo on arms to Israel while the siege of Gaza was taking place. What really stunned me even more was looking at a Gallup poll released just a few days ago, and the percentage of Democrats who approve of what Israel is doing militarily in Gaza, 8%. Can you imagine? Only 8% of Democrats in this country approve of what Israel is doing. And yet we have not only Kamala Harris continuing to this day refusing to challenge what Israel's doing, but even though there's been progress in Congress, we still have the overwhelming majority of the members of the House of Senate and a strong minority now, as of a vote a few days ago, of Democrats in the Senate refusing to challenge this arms aid to Israel. But we have just an overall political culture, and you can see it by the actions and inactions of Congress, just letting this continue, enabling this to continue. And whether it's Biden or whether it's now Trump, the president has just continued to send basically all the weapons that the Israeli government wants to continue basically to murder people, murder civilians in Gaza.
I think Norman Solomon, that Gallup poll, tell me if I'm wrong, overall support for more weapons was at 32%, which you have to wonder at almost a third of a supposedly educated country favoring a genocide a couple years in. But still, the support in the US Senate in at least one of the two votes that Senator Sanders forced recently was 70%, 70 senators voting for more weapons to Israel, right?
So the progress is, it's part full, part empty. Depends on how one is going to look at it philosophically or politically. The improvement is there. It's been getting better and better, and it's so far from where it needs to be. I know one of the senators who has spoken out lately in the last year or so, and was among the 19 who at the end of last year voted to cut off some weapons, did so a few days ago. Senator Chris Von Hollen from Maryland. Yes, these are, we're grading on a curve to some degree. And so yes, Van Hollen has spoken out well. He's gone to the border between Gaza and Egypt many months ago. And what I wrote about in my book, War Made Invisible, in the afterword about the war on Gaza in the paperback edition, was including about Van Hollen as an example, because it was last February last year when Van Hollen gave an impassioned speech on the Senate floor. He had just come back from Gaza, and he said, given the, and this is way back a long time ago, given that the refusal to allow food into Gaza was using food as a weapon of war, which is a huge war crime, he said point blank on the Senate floor, the top officials of the Israeli government are war criminals, which you usually don't hear on the floor of the Senate about the leaders of a country that is a close U.S. ally. In fact, since World War II, Israel has gotten more military aid than any other country on the planet. And yet, Senator Van Hollen made that statement. And then a few hours later, he voted for more weapons for Israel. So go figure.
Well, I figure they're trying to have it both ways, some of these people. The Democratic senator woman from Michigan, Senator Slotkin, I think her name is, made the mistake last week of going on Breaking Points show where they asked her repeatedly, how do you sleep at night? How do you keep voting for weapons for a genocide? And she didn't vote. She didn't vote yes. She didn't vote no. She just, I won't vote for the weapons votes that Senator Sanders forced, presumably so that she can't be criticized for having voted yes or for having voted no. But my God, it's weapons for a genocide. You have to vote no.
I don't know what rings of hell, and that would maybe a literary scholar could tell me, that particular legislator would occupy in a just world. Not that I believe in hell, but overall, there's such a huge gap between the grassroots of the country, what most people want, despite the conditioning that comes from political pronouncements in Washington, and despite the preponderance, not all of, but a lot of the mass so-called legacy media, which has really given Israel often the benefit of the doubt, and certainly if not truncated, that maybe is a understatement, has totally severed the connection between what happens in Washington and what happens in Gaza. One aspect I think of is what could be called victims without victimizers. There's often a passive voice in the reporting on what happens in Gaza. People are hungry, people are killed. Sometimes Israel is mentioned as the source of the bombs that are falling from the air or the missiles that are being fired. But then what about the causality chain that could be followed right back to the White House under Biden, now under Trump, and the Congress? It's sort of like, let's play dumb. And it's not coincidence that a lot of journalists are conditioned to play dumb, because it's very rare for mainstream reporters who we're told are at the apex of sophistication to actually talk about what is causing what. And the genocide is being caused by, as I wrote about in a recent article, the partnership between the United States and Israel. This is a genocidal partnership.
We're speaking with Norman Solomon. You can find him at Roots Action and at progressivehub.net and elsewhere. Norman, why is Senator Sanders able to force these votes even as they fail in the Senate, and there's never a vote in the House? And is it because the so-called leader, the Speaker of the House, is not following the law, is not allowing Congress members to force such votes?
It's amazing to me how the Speaker of the House, I don't know where that word came from, but Speaker of the House, since there's a lot of speakers, but capital S Speaker, that person can control to such a huge extent anything that goes to the floor that comes to a vote. And there's that mechanism, as I remember, it's called a discharge petition, but there has to be signatures from a majority of House members to override the dictatorship of the Speaker Thuriot. And so, we're stuck with that. And the last time there was a vote, there was a very bad result. I think it's been a very long time about appropriations of weapons from the United States to Israel. And so, another really horrible, mind-blowing aspect is the way in which the president of the United States is a de facto dictator. Once in the Oval Office, can do pretty much damn anything, and more than ever that case now with a very compliant, enabling Supreme Court. So when it comes to shipping weapons, like, okay, let's do it because the president wants to do it.
In theory, the War Powers Resolution can be used to force certain kinds of votes if you have a Speaker of the House following the law. And in theory, these weapons shipments are already illegal under 9 or 10 different U.S. laws and international treaties. And that doesn't matter. You still need to get an additional vote redundantly saying to stop them if they're going to be stopped, right?
Since the early 1970s, the War Powers Act, or usually called the War Powers Technically Resolution, has been a really good idea that's never had any teeth whatsoever, right? And I'm trying to remember how many times it's been utilized with a vote from Congress. Not often. As I remember, it's always been ignored. Every president from Clinton to the current one just says, oh, I don't want to obey that.
Well, the votes have always failed to get a majority in both houses, except one time, which was on Yemen, and Trump was president and he vetoed it. And then, as you'll recall, a guy named Joe Biden became president and they didn't pass it again. And so, what are you going to do?
Well, deference to the party. I mean, party loyalty is just such a corrosive, pernicious concept, and even worse, internalized. And I think that a little bit of the more outspoken aspects from Democrats about the killing in Gaza is because the commander in chief is no longer a Democrat, which is just a terrible reason for anything. I mean, we've had these experiences going to other countries. Mine has been to go to Afghanistan, to go to Iraq, and the people I met with one arm or in a cancer hospital where sanctions have prevented chemotherapy from even being available, they really did not care whether the president in the United States was a Democrat or Republican. And so that becomes an irrelevancy to people who are actually suffering from results of US foreign policy.
There was a great live stream or webinar that Roots Action did, or the Teach-In Network did recently, teachinnetwork.org, which is a project of Roots Action Education Fund, did on Trump's version of militarism. And the main takeaway seemed to be it's managed to be even worse than Biden.
Yeah, which is mind-blowing because given, for instance, back to Gaza for a moment, that Biden was actively enabling genocide, there was, a reasonable assumption. People said, well, it can't possibly get worse. Well, it can get worse. And in the case of the macro analysis that we did hear from these great speakers, and I do encourage people, do go to teachinnetwork.org. That's teachinnetwork.org if you want to see some of those videos. This was a great macro analysis of the role of the United States in the world. And like it or not, and we don't, the US government still has a huge overshadow of the entire planet in terms of how the resources are appropriated or extracted or whatever. There's the reality that the US spending on the military, and we should not call it defense spending, US spending on the military is more than the next 9 or 10 countries combined, and most of them are allies. And then when we compare where US foreign policy has gone, the more happy face rhetoric that the Biden administration put on its militarism has been supplanted and replaced with more flagrant rhetoric about we run the show, we run the world, and we should work our will on the world because we're the biggest and more powerful, most powerful ones on the global block. And so all this stuff about Greenland and take back the Panama Canal, it's just a more overt attitude that U.S. supremacy should rule. The rules-based order. We make the rules. We break the rules. And I wouldn't totally conflate the foreign policies because the Trump foreign policy is even worse than the Biden foreign policy. But still, in all, it's an attitude that says we have the right, and by some theological, ideological, nationalistic notion, the duty to get other people around the world to do what we want them to.
Yeah, I like to say the US military spending is as much as 190 some countries combined, if you take them from the bottom of the list, because it's only a handful near the top that spend even a significant fraction of what the United States spends.
Yeah, absolutely. And we wouldn't want to like line up like as children, some of us had the toy soldiers and who's going to win and all of that. But if one did want to, for a moment, evaluate things that way, there was the meeting in Bogota, Colombia, in the last couple of weeks. I was called the
The Hague
Gaza Group, I think. Was that it? The Gaza Group.
Group. I
Yes.
think it was called the Hague Group, even
Oh,
though.
right. That's right. The Hague Group. And so there was some push from some organizers and activists that the Hague group should decide that those 25 or so countries who were to some degree committed to that configuration should get together and do a military intervention against Israel to free people in Gaza, which at first glance might sound like a good idea. And then you look at the list of the countries, and it's almost like a mouse that roared scenario. I mean, let's face it, Israel is the dominant military power in the entire Middle East region, largely because of the development intentionally in alliance with the United States. But at this point, even if the US didn't exist, the Air Force and the power militarily of Israel is just so huge and has been put to use by bombing and strafing almost every country in the Middle East. I don't think they've gotten around to attacking Saudi Arabia for obvious reasons, but almost every other country at one point or another, Israel has been, or US and Israel have been doing. So I think the takeaway is there's not a military solution. And the more that we're encouraged to think that there is, the less we have any creative brain power to figure out how to get out of these horrors.
I do think they might have run out of bombs long since, if not for the United States.
Oh, for sure. I think 70% of Israel's weaponry has continued to come from the US.
People, we talked about public opinion. If people could only get to vote, if we only had a democracy, occasionally they get to vote on something that's at least partially related. And people in New York got to vote in a primary for a mayor, where his opponents had made the big issue, accusing him of anti-Semitism for opposing genocide. And the results, I think, are very, very encouraging, even if there are all kinds of other factors at play. And I think might have been different 6 months or a year earlier. What's your analysis?
Well, I agree with that. There's a really important trend line that has never come from Washington, never come from the mass media, and that is the grassroots. That's why the Mamdani victory in the primary was so shocking, especially to the establishment mass media, because at the grassroots, because of not the technology of social media, but the way in which people have chosen to use social media and other ways to organize, there's been a realization that the militarism is destructive. That Israel has been running a scam by equating its government with the Jewish religion and, quote, the Jewish people. And when we expose it as the scam that it is, then it opens up a lot of possibilities, not only with understanding. I know that the information that people have is so crucial. A 100 years of war against Palestine, for instance, a brilliant book that many people that I learned a lot from, for instance, is one that is an example of how when we learn things, we can demystify the political propaganda system. And I guess what I'm getting to is that enables us to take action both in terms of organizing grassroots movements and so forth, and also politically. So the mayoral race in New York City is an example of that. And I think around the country where the potential is there. I mean, we shouldn't depend on elections, but at the same time, we should utilize them as, so to speak, one of the arrows in the quiver. And I think that's going to be very important. Mamdani's victory, if it does come in November, will be very important. There is reporting that AIPAC and Israel Can Do No Wrong pro-genocide groups, such as AIPAC, have now set their sights on Summer Lee, who's a very progressive anti-militarism member of Congress from the Pittsburgh area in Pennsylvania. Well, that's going to be an important battle. There's also been a lot of attention from the Israel Right or Wrong groups to try to take out electorally Ilhan Omar coming up. So defending these champions for social justice and peace really is important as part of the process.
Norman Salmon, we had just 3 minutes left, and there was a satirical songwriter performer who died recently, who I think was the one who had said that irony died when Kissinger got the Nobel Peace Prize. It seems to me that it's pushed to a greater extreme every week on my social media feed. You now have Israel preventing the UN from bringing in food and producing videos blaming the UN for not giving food to the people of Gaza. I mean, if it was like a doomsday clock to ultimate dishonesty, I think we'd be seconds maybe. Is there a point we ever reach when they can't make it worse?
Well, that's a very good question. We wake up and we think, how can this be? How can these things be? And yet they are. Yeah, Tom Lehrer was a great satirist in his comment when Kissinger won the Nobel Peace Prize. I think is with us now very much. You can't make this stuff up, as the saying goes, and yet here it is, right in front of us.
Well, we have to keep working on it. Roots Action is one of the places to work on it, Institute for Public Accuracy. How can people keep up with you and your work, Norman?
Well, definitely through rootsaction.org. Also, I'm writing frequently for websites like commondreams.org, which I recommend. I think supporting these kinds of independent activist groups and independent media outlets is really crucial. And so, writers, activists, we have our own personal lives and we have our own personal struggles, whatever those might be. But most importantly, we're building institutions. And when we have outlets that we believe in, organizations that we believe in, it's really important that we give them support with our time, energy, if we can volunteer, and yes, also our money. And David, you're reminding me that after 20, 30 years of efforts, the right wing has found a way to really damage the financial well-being of so-called public broadcasting. And they've taken a huge bite out of the funding for NPR and PBS stations and so forth through cutting to shreds, I think, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting budget. And a lot of people listening to us may feel, well, oh, well, now I should really give money to my local NPR station, my local PBS station. And frankly, I'm very ambivalent about that because National Public Radio often stands for National Pentagon Radio when we deal with or look at or listen to its broadcasting on foreign affairs and US wars and so forth. I'm not saying that NPR, PBS, All Things Considered, Morning Edition are not bringing people some content of some value, but we have limited resources. So I would encourage people to think long and hard whether they're going to try to fill the gap that the Trumpites have created at NPR and PBS station versus your local community independent radio station, if you have one, the Pacifica Network, your favorite progressive websites, your favorite organizing groups, your organizations that you believe in. So, since you do have limited resources, fill the gap where you believe it's most important.
Great advice. Let's all follow it. Norman Solomon, thank you for everything you've been doing and for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thanks for Talk World Radio, David.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.